How do you sign the thing with his accent apology?
Thank you. meeting chairperson.
Time now is 15 minutes past 9 o'clock. My intention is not to hold people here for more than 2 hours because we don't have much to do with today. But we thought this is very important for us to slot in our program before we vote for the next. I think we need to deal with the deals that are dealt with in Parliament because we are the monitoring committee. And I felt on the day that when they were interviewed, parliamentary interviews, when the CGE was interviewed, that something is wrong, we shouldn't have been left out. And I don't know how to do the whole thing. So I asked them, but it only seemed I was not the only one who was concerned. Our professor was also concerned, Joy and Christy, that if we lose this opportunity, it means we'll be left out in making this law. And whatever we think we can do, that we won't have any opportunity if we don't do it now. The law I'm talking about the bill, the traditional court bill. Has everybody got a copy of it?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. If the members remember very well, we had read, when was this, I think, somewhere early this year, we had invited some people from justice, and we had three advocates coming to us here, and they explained what problems they have in justice, especially in traditional court, and we promised that that means that we invite them again, or if they have anything that they can invite us. But I think at one stage they sent an indication there was something going on at the end, and we couldn't go there because we were also busy doing something. But the issues that they raised, they were very important. In terms of how this law has been implemented and what it means, the dignity of a person, and what it means to us as women, what it means to us as partners, of course, men and women. I think at this moment we will be giving a chance to, I don't know the name of that is very good of us to ask her a name over the table. What is the name of the person who is going to be breaking up?
Her name is Killian.
Okay. She's going to be breaking up on this and we can have discuss. And I think the committee can suggest what would be the next step from here so that we really make an impact and intervention. Nevertheless, before we go there, looking at the agenda, I don't know whether we can really remind ourselves what we agreed on that time. We agreed that so as to minimize this issue of having a lot of minutes to adopt at the end of the quarter, we should adopt minutes every meeting. But AIC is not blocked in. I would like to advise our secretary to say, having said that, we welcome everyone who is here. It has come to our attention that the NCOP is not managing to meet with us. Now, I think it's about three meetings in succession that we have missed them. I don't know what we can do about this. Maybe we can discuss it now. The other issue is that we don't have a deputy chair. And that's the other issue that I think we should deal with. How do we approach the whole thing? I dealt with two items already. That's how I deal with my agenda. And I dealt with the agenda. And I dealt with welcome. I dealt with apology at the same time.
Apologies,
and maybe we finalize the second one. Have you got any kind of apology? Oh,
she said she was not getting hold of the secretary. She sent the secretary to write an apology.
Okay, here we're going to
maybe the secretary will bring it.
Okay, I'll tell the
we've gone to the private hearing in Calcutta.
We've got an apology from Mrs. Kemba. The apology for absence from the meeting schedule for Friday, the 20th, starting at 9. She has taken in with flu.
Oh.
And the other one is the apology from Mrs. Rajvan. Yes, but there's no reason. She will be in a debate. Okay. Is there a good thing? No. Okay. And the other apology is from this girl. She's not well. She hasn't been well for some time. The other one, is Mr. Max.
When
last did you see this judgment?
Yo.
I don't know. And the one from Muntu is attending some disciplinary, I think in her constituency, there was a mismanagement of funds by the administration now since when she has gone for this. Yeah, that is it. And I'm going to give it to you.
The
three items.
Okay. The other apology is of member Jeff Matthews. He says that they have the meeting. He will join us later.
Okay. That's from the NCO. Have you got any other apology? Are we accepting this apology?
That's all one, the problem.
Including Mundi. The one that is gone.
I guess it's still, and she said to the secretary, I'm going to bring.
No, I'm saying it.
You cannot call your own end on our desk report.
Okay. The second one we don't accept. And we accept the other. Have you got a second one?
What are we thinking about the minute?
We don't have to.
Yeah, we need to bring it next time. And also, when we are informed, write that there will be a of limits so that people must be, we need a Quran that must be returned.
Any other thing about the minutes? Yeah, just say, Honorable, I think we are quite done. But just to remind the committee that this is our last meeting in this session. And I asked the secretary whether she can ask for a special meeting on Wednesday so that she can adopt.
I just wanted to say something though, but now Marcus is pushing me to do the provoking me to do it. Chairperson, I've been away for some time. First of all, it was this xenophobia thing. I happened to be in the Babela's task team. And thereafter, I was off sick for a week. I went to the doctor only to find that I was too, you know. I'm so sorry that I've missed quite a lot of the deliberations from this committee. But it was just, at a certain stage, I said one of my researchers must come and represent me just to get what is going on. So, my apologies.
Thank you. I think it's accepted because some of these committees are just formed, you know, without being prepared, like the other committees that are formed. And that's part of the work. I think everyone is just getting in this parliament. It's accepted.
Thank you, sir.
The other issues I'm going to be talking about on item number six, other business, because it's so then, can we proceed to have the briefing on the traditional? No, before we go there, you know, I'm very sorry, then. You know, amongst us, we've got new members. The new allocation on the ANC side of members. we have got Honorable Randy, and the president. And you know the way he looks at me is always my colleague. It's also my colleague in committee. So I that's attracted him.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the Honorable the Honorable member will introduce the first. I don't know the surname properly. I might be using the
name. So you say Honorable Dokas. That is Dokas is the name.
My name is Dokas Seadimo.
Yes. Okay. welcome, Honorable Dokas. This is a committee that deals with gender issues. And by gender, we are not biased towards any gender. It deals both with men and women. They are right, equality. And of course, we would like to uplift the standard of the life of women, because they were the ones who have been taken for quite some time. But we look at both genders in whatever law has been passed and I think I spoke to our new FOTU week, although he's not here, I don't have him, but he said he got everything that we need. We'll meet him next time. That I think we need to have some sort of workshop, you know, a mini workshop, just to take people on board on what this committee is supposed to do, what is our role, so that people can be able to work. Don't be able to be out of place. And you are welcome. Now we are going to introduce ourselves. Nina, I'm Mrs. Mahudwa. I'm Stoli Mahudwa. I'm a member of the African National Congress in Parliament, and I'm just given the responsibility of chairing this committee so far. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janet Simple. From the DA. I've been on the committee since I've been in Parliament in 1999.
Connie Zigalala is my name, from the ISP. I'm one of the new members because I joined this committee round about 2004 or later. Thank you.
So,
good morning. I'm Solisa Maka, a member of the African National Congress, deployed in this committee since 1999.
Good morning, members. I'm Joy Watson, and I am the senior researcher assigned to both Joint Monitoring Committee.
Yes, boss.
Yes. And the people sitting one of those times that people sitting that they don't see. And also from TFC.
No, my name is Jimmy from the Catholic Bishop's Council.
From what?
Catholic Bishop's Council.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And then we can proceed now that we know each other. You may proceed,
Yankee. Thank you, Ms. Suri. I just wanted to start by giving some background to the way in which we came to work for the committee now. It's been acknowledged that the JMCs have not had the same kind of support that other committees in Parliament have had. And as part of a directive that came from the politicians, we've tried to increase support given to all committees. But for example, the JMC on children, youth, and persons with disabilities did not have a researcher since 1994. Mm. They operated without one. And what we've done now is we've created ourselves, so the economics researchers are together, social researchers, etc. And the cluster that I'm the senior researcher for is the Joint Monitoring Committees and Members' Legislative Proposals Cluster. We're the smallest cluster, but it means that we do have more dedicated support, and so we've hired Crystal, who's a dedicated researcher to this committee. This committee also didn't have a dedicated researcher before. I used to help out, but I also helped out with Labour and other committees. And what we've realized is a couple of years ago, Mr. Kaspar Handik prepared a document on the JMCs and some of the challenges that the JMCs faced. And what we're trying to do is, and Crystal will be speaking to my story in the next term about this, is we're trying to update that, look at what are the challenges facing the JMCs now, and how can we zone in our support from a research side in order to to better capacitate the committee. When there are a number of problems, I just found out yesterday, for example, that there was a workshop being organized by the EU PSP on gender mainstreaming and disability mainstreaming. And when I spoke with the chairperson of the other JMC, she had no idea. Now, the JMC sits on a Friday, they're sitting now and they're trying to have a meeting, but they're trying to send their members there as well. It's a problem when we have workshops on that affect the business of this committee, and we're organizing important meetings at the same time that JMCs can meet, which is on a Friday. And I'm not sure how the communication went down, but we only found out yesterday. So, you know, we need to find ways of addressing these things, and we're starting a project where, through Crystal, we're wanting to talk to members in next term and get a document together tabling what are those concerns, and that and my story can possibly use that document to take to people like Mr. Deutsch to take up some of these concerns. But one of the things that we've identified is that there's a need on our side to work with researchers to plug in what's happening in other committees. So, for example, Gillian is assigned to the PC on justice and works with Mr. Karim. And what we managed to do very successfully with the justice researcher in the past is when the Child Justice Bill came out, we asked the justice researcher to go to the JMC on children, youth, and persons with disability and to present that bill. We then took what members said and we collated a submission on behalf of the JMC, which then went to Mr. Karim's committee as a submission from the JMC on the Child Justice Bill. And that worked very nicely because the Portfolio Committee on Justice then had a document with which they could work to incorporate the JMC's concerns. And we thought that it might be a good idea to initiate the same process here, where we get Gillian to brief us on what's happening in justice, what is happening with the bill, to give us an overview of what is the content of the bill, and then to look at what does this committee have to say. And between Crystal and myself, we can collate some of that, come back to the committee, and if the committee endorses it, it can be submitted to the PC on justice. Just to say, this bill is a very important one, and there's been a number of things in the media and newspapers, etc., talking about the gender implications of the bill. And we've seen people like Commissioner Nomanisa Gaza very vehement about her response to the bill. And I think that it's very important. There are voices in civil society saying, where is the JMC's response to it? It can't be silent. So we're hoping that this is the beginning of a process of collating that response and taking it to justice. The last I heard, and Julian can update us on this, is that there was such controversy around the bill. The chairperson, Mr. Karim, had asked for a task team to look at the bill. And I think that one of the things that we could possibly look at is how do we deploy a member from this committee to sit on that task team. But those are the discussions that we can look at once Julian's presented. At this point, I'm going to ask Julian to just take us through the bill.
Before Jason comes in. Thank you, Chair. May I just say that I'm very, very pleased to hear of that reaction. I'm sorry if I haven't been discussed before, Chair, in this committee. But for a long time now, this committee has really been kind of floundering around through no fault of its own because it doesn't have the resources. And it does have very important work to do, particularly as far as the whole gender machinery is concerned. Not so much the actual operation of the gender machinery, but the voice of the JMC in the gender machinery and speaking out on behalf of gender in the country. I mean, after all, this is the parliamentary committee that deals with gender, so it's the elected voice of the people of this country, so it really is important that the voice is heard. But it's been really completely under-resourced through no fault of its own. So I'm very pleased to hear that, but I'm also a bit concerned that all this is happening when Parliament is practically closing down. And Chair, I'm not quite sure what your plan is for the rest of the year, but I'm sort of meeting for 3 days in August, 3 days in September, 3 days in October, 3 days in November. So I don't know what the committee program is, but it would be very nice if there is some work going forward from us to leave a legacy for you, especially Chair, from this term of office. Thank you.
Thank I've given you a bit try to extract some of the major points and
make it as soon as possible.
Then
you
see,
this is actually my first presentation, and the fact that it's to a joint monitoring committee comment makes me quite nervous, so I apologize, and I'd like to ask for the members
no,
please. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to mention that, as Tori mentioned, I did do some background work on the bill for Mr. Kaleem and the Justice Committee. But I think it's important for me to stress that while on a theoretical level I have now developed an understanding of the bill, I can't speak for the community but practice customer positions. That's why I think this is such a wonderful opportunity to get the guidance and expertise of the members of this committee to try and incorporate that theory with the actual lived-in realities of the communities that are affected by the traditional courts bill. So thank you. I think to give you some historical context of the reason for the drafting of the bill, I think two key reasons that fed into the drafting. One was the Black Administration Act, the infamous Black Administration Act of 1927, and the other was the impact of the Constitution. The customary courts were given official recognition through sections 12 and 20 of the Black Administration Act of 1927, and this act tried to bring the chief courts into the official court system. This recognition and incorporation was attractive to the state because it allowed the state to exercise certain, the apartheid state to exercise certain level of control in rural areas. Unfortunately, it had the side effect of some degree making chief state functionaries exercising authority to the advantage of the state, which meant that previously where traditional leaders were involved with traditional justice through a community council. The power of the community council was eroded, and greater power was placed in the hands of traditional leaders. The other thing which was unfortunate was there was, even though there was this dual system with sort of the more Western type courts and the customary courts, there wasn't the sense of duality, there was no sense of equality. The customary courts were always perceived as somehow lesser courts than the official, more official court system. This process was worsened by the fragmentation that occurred through the implementation of the homeland system. Because that meant that different homelands, as they were given power to develop policies and regulations around traditional courts and around the justice system. And so they developed a whole range of different types of policies and regulations. So there was no coherence. You know, there was a whole lot of different systems, different things going on. And I think that's one of the reasons why the bill was developed to try and address that problem of fragmentation. With post 1994 and the constitution, obviously that would have been the dismantling of apartheid and the required amendment of discriminatory legislation and therefore the drafting of new legislation to conform with the constitution. Clearly the Black Administration Act did not conform with the Constitution. However, the problem, they did introduce an appeal act to appeal certain sections of the Black Administration Act, but they couldn't appeal sections dealing with traditional justice and traditional courts, section 12 and 20, until they had something in place to take place of that old legislation. So certain provisions of the Black Administration Act were maintained. So at least the traditional courts are operating under some kind of legal structure. But clearly the sections are extremely offensive and very discriminatory. For instance, they refer to
chief contestants can deal with claims arising out of black law brought by black against black. I mean, you know, clearly the legislation is acting revised. So this started a process undertaken by the Department of Justice to try and implement Egypt legislation to take the place of BAA. This turned out to be quite an expensive process. Initial act was passed in 2005, which gave the department a deadline of July 2006 to put legislation in place. And the department couldn't meet this deadline, so a further extension was given to give the department until September 2007. And they were unfortunately also unable to meet this deadline. So they now, a new extension was given to 30th of June this year to develop legislation. And the department has, which resulted in the judicial court bill, along with the policy framework and traditional justice. The intention of the bill is to try to align judicial justice, the justice system with the Constitution, in order to promote the recognized ideals, which they really do want to maintain, which are important, of those elements in traditional courts of restorative justice, to promote access to justice, and to affirm the role of traditional leadership in the administration of justice. So at the minute we're sitting, that's resulted in the policy framework, that resulted in the bill that now lies before us. And the department, I think, was trying to meet the deadline of the end of June 2008 to put legislation in place. While the department, meanwhile, I think it's also important to point out that the South African Law Reform Commission had commenced and produced a discussion paper in 1999, which was trying to evaluate the role and the place of traditional courts within the overall justice structure. And they looked at some of the advantages and disadvantages of customary courts. They talked about the fact that these courts are important because they are, for many people, I mean, I think the number is about 21 million people who are in rural communities who will be affected by traditional justice and traditional court structures. And so for these people, I mean, traditional courts are accessible. You know, they're in the villages, they're in the communities, they're within the reach of most of the inhabitants. People don't have to travel long distances, which introduces another factor of cost. I mean, these courts are cheap to maintain. People don't have to pay large amounts of money to try to get to urban centres to access justice. Traditional courts apply customary law, which is familiar to the people who are operating within the community. And I think people can relate to it a lot more than you know, the Roman Dutch law. And the procedure in the courts is flexible and understandable, and it's informal, and it's because of the community and the restorative justice element, they thought that, you know, that's why it's important that these structures should be retained, but they just needed to be regulated. And also, most importantly, the language issue. I mean, the fact that the language of the courts, the language of the people in the area, which also ties in with access to justice and issues like that. Overall, the fact that the courts focus on reconciliation and social harmony rather than punishing the victim, so that incorporation and reintegration of victim and offender back into the community. The Commission did have some concerns about exclusion of legal practitioners in the traditional justice processes. Although they countered it by saying that, I mean, that might be raised as an issue that would have to be possibly addressed in the bill, which it wasn't. They also were concerned particularly about gender issues. Gender issues in terms of the composition of the court and the fact that of women as litigants coming before the court, you know, would they be empowered to do, you know, what was the platform there? It's, you know, the commission reported that the there is a sense that traditional justice systems are often dominated by men of a higher status and tend to exclude women, minorities, and young people. And the goal of preservation in the community may be used to force weaker parties to accept agreements which may result in discrimination against women and against younger people. They also looked at the place for the courts in a constitutional democracy, and they were trying to balance the fact that critics of the courts see them as something conservative and something that they're unable to dispense justice in a modern society, while others see them as good examples of dispute resolution mechanisms on the ground that should be made use of in terms of increasing access to justice. Some of the concerns about the traditional court dispensation and the values that are enshrined in the Constitution can be summarised as when the Commission went out and did the consultation process in the community, there were fears that there were allegations of abuse of judicial authority by some judicial leaders. There was a sense in which there were patriarchal stereotypes and an exclusion of women from the traditional court structures. As I mentioned, a bias against women litigants. This problem of fragmentation and the problem with some of the fact that the traditional courts, some of them still used corporal punishment, which was quite a serious issue. Ultimately, though, the Law Commission said that gave three key reasons why the traditional courts do have an important role to play. And these included the fact that they are protected by the Constitution. I mean, Section 166E and Section 16 says that every court, including courts of judicial leaders, that should continue to function. So the Constitution embraces the courts, it embraces people's rights, culture, and tradition, so that has to be respected. Also, traditional leaders and communities have a strong lobbying position. I mean, you know, that also has to be respected. And the cultural values derived in South Camino are unique to traditional communities. Inherent in these values are practices that seek to promote social cohesion and coexistence, and it was important to promote and to protect them. And ultimately, the fact was that these courts were in existence. Some form of regulation had to be adopted to try and bring them into the constitution, into the new constitutional area. And they use familiar language and methods, and they involve the community. And they're guided by the culture and tradition of the community, you know, which means justice is dispensed easier. And this sense of participation of communities should be embraced and should be reinforced through whatever legislation. Ultimately, then, the Commission acknowledged that there were shortcomings in the system, but these could be repaired and could be adapted to meet the changing needs of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It is a point of concern, and this would emerge through the public hearings, that the Law Commission released its report and draft the bill in 2003, and they did conduct an extensive consultation process. I mean, across the board, NGOs, they went out into rural communities, they conducted workshops, even workshops that, because women did request that they wanted a safe place to speak, so there were workshops where there were only women participating, so they felt free to have their say. They released this report and draft bill in 2003. 5 years later, the department releases its bill, which is different from the Law Reform Commission bill, and this has emerged as quite a serious issue in the public partisan public participation process. Just briefly, I mean, the contents of the bill are, as I said, I think they're going to change drastically, so I'm not going to go in by going through a lot of each clause, because so basically the bill has 24 sections. It's to try and bring along alignment between the traditional court system and the Constitution. It's it covers the mandate of the judicial court in regard to settlement and disputes of criminal matters and procedures and processes for appeal. It sets out rules for providing officers, the fact that records must be kept, the transfer of cases if required, and the definitions of powers of presiding officers and list of schedule of offences. It also provides for regulation of training our programs for the presiding officers of traditional court. When the public hearings were held on the 13th, 14th, the 20th and the 21st of May, some of the key points of concern around the bill were, as I mentioned, problem with the fact that the drafters of justice have failed really to take into account a lot of the work that the Law Reform Commission have done. So the consultation process undertaken by justice seem to focus almost solely on traditional leaders and on magistrates, with very little community involvement and participation. And this is a major problem with the public at the public hearings. You know, where was the voice of the people in the process? There was no apparent engagement with, especially with rural communities, especially with women in rural communities. There was a sense that there was a bias towards traditional leadership, and this was, as I say, this is a major point of concern. But other issues related to concerns about gender equality and the fact that had really enough consideration been given to ensure that women could participate fully in the process. You know, the fact that the courts have been dealing with domestic violence matters, and you know, there wasn't a lot of provision for training. In terms of this bill, that the courts are no longer going to be able to deal with domestic violence matters, but you know, there's no clarity on the training that's going to be provided to the traditional leaders dispensing justice, so that they know that, you know, these are now the issues that they're not going to no longer going to be able to deal with. For instance, women participating in the law school workshops expressed concerns about practices barring women from attending court proceedings, and there was a fear that there would not be sufficient women appointed in senior leadership positions to take on the role in these courts. There was also quite a concern about the fact that the multi-level nature of the judicial system had been ignored. The Women's Legal Centre pointed out that there are different levels of dispute resolution mechanisms in customary law, and there was no recognition of this system, and there was little recognition in the bill of the role of community councils, which really should, and in the Law Reform Commission bill, were the bedrock of the bill that they drafted. But there was a sense that the bill, instead of encouraging growth from the community court level, was imposing something on people without consulting with them. There was also a fear that the bill entrenched colonial and apartheid boundaries, and there was no recognition that these boundaries were arbitrary, and often in communities there may be minority groups have been absorbed, and there was no recognition of what recourse they would have if perhaps they didn't follow the general customs or maybe of the majority of the members of the community. There was concern about the designation of senior traditional leaders. I mean, as mentioned, there was a fear that there was a tremendous centralization of power with one individual, rather than focusing on establishing community councils to involving women that would allow for the community to participate and allow for greater representation, rather than single person who might possibly be a senior male traditional leader, which has a lot of problems. There was some concern about the fact that they actually didn't establish the type of training that they provided for traditional leaders. I mean, would they be sensitized around issues of gender equality, the mention of domestic violence? Would also the training involve the community? Would they be informed about the changes that were going to be happening to the courts and the impact of the new legislation? Another serious issue was the fact that the bill failed to give people the opportunity to opt out of the system. In fact, it makes an offence for anyone in the jurisdiction of the judicial court not to appear. And this undermines the consensual nature of customary law. And I think Adam was particularly concerned about the rights of minorities and the respect that people would be coerced into, compelled to attend, and that's why it was critical that they be provided with some kind of opting out clause. And this is again where the bill differed from the Law Reform Commission, because the Law Reform Commission provided for like a registrar who could be approached in those instances to look at concerns that were raised by people, and there was no provision for that in the draft bill from that. Another issue of concern was the fact that in terms of the sanctions of the bill, there was a fear that this might lead to the imposition of forced labour. You know, the Section 10 of the bill refers to performance of service without remuneration for the benefit of the community. And this was serious issues about the fact that people might be forced to work in the traditional leaders' field, or and then the SLR, the Law Reform Commission bill, specifically excluded service on the personal property of a traditional leader or other public official. So in the end, after the public, quite contentious public hearings, it was clear that I think even the department admitted that they were trying to rush the bill through in order to meet the June 30th of June 2008 deadline, and that further consultation was required. So after the public hearing and the controversial nature of the commentary in the bill, it was clear that further consultation and investigation had to be done with it. No way that the bill could go through it in its current form. So the Portfolio Committee, in consultation with traditional leaders, with civil society representatives and the department, decided to extend once again the two sections of the Black Administration Act for a further 18 months and to allow time for further consultation with all interested sectors of society in order to try and develop a more consensual bill. I think yesterday there was a hearing in the National Assembly office, the repeal of the Black Administration Act and Amendment of Certain Laws Bill, which seeks to extend the life of these sections. In the meantime, now that they've been given the 18-day breathing period, the Portfolio Committee decided that the best, in order to try and resolve the issues and to try and achieve consensus, that, as Joy mentioned, the CAF team is in the process of being formed with representatives from civil society and traditional leaders. And to give room for both civil society and traditional leadership to make input, this is going to be done under the in line with the facilitator. They're going to look for two academics who can be appointed to be neutral arbiters to facilitate the discussion process. The task team is going to meet once it's been formed to achieve consensus on the areas of agreement and disagreement and to adopt a planned program of consultation. the NCOP will also be involved, and they're going to ensure that there's some degree of practical research into the actual functioning of the courts in rural areas now. So I think it's extremely important, and I hope that the JNC will also engage in the bill, given that the ramifications and the gender implications will it hold. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. If that is the best of your voice, I'm afraid you can't come to our right.
I'm very sorry.
Ella
Lepa.
But thank you very much, Jenny. You know, maybe let me start by saying, Jenny, you have explained what expectations you have of our intervention as committee. But first of all, as Kevin, you know, having highlighted some of the disadvantages. Yes. And the implications of this customary, the implications of traditional costs. I am content to ask how far has the, I know that there's 18 months now, given for whatever consultation. How far has the justice gone in terms of consultation with the traditional leaders on this? Because I know, you know, if you go through this thing, the traditional leaders, I don't know how can I explain their behavior, but for a long time they've been left to dominate in this area. And this is a male-dominated area. And I would like to know whether, how do they receive this intervention? That's what I want to know as far as you know. Because having heard from what you think are the concerns, there hasn't been much of a public hearing so far. And the inclusion of the communities and all the support that are supposed to be. And if you talk about this customary law and the reform commission and all that, I think we left it for a long time without fleshing out what the implications are. And we have been hearing when we went around, you know, in our oversight processes that each time we raise the issue of the customary law, it's just put aside like this. And these are the implications I would like to know. The acceptance of this from the
leader. I'm sure if I can just say yes. I mean, I think there was a sense, you're right, that the traditional leaders had received the majority of the costs had been consulted. And it was interesting to see in the public hearings and in meetings afterwards their reaction. Initially, I think their approach was that the Black Administration Act is so offensive that some kind of legislation does need to be put in place. You know, there does have to be some kind of change there. But interestingly enough, as the public hearings went on, they also, I think, accepted that that a failing on the part of the department was, and even perhaps themselves, they acknowledged this, was a failing to consult with their communities, to actually take it to the people and actually speak. And they did, in the end, accept that this was an issue, and that the only way to proceed and the only way to develop a bill that was going to pass was if they actually they also got involved in the process of taking the bill to the people. So I think they're on board. They've come onto the task team. They're part of the process, and my understanding is that they really do, as I say, want to develop something in order to repeal those sections of the Black Administration Act.
Honourable Yene, I don't know either, because the Honourable Yene and you, let me hear from Honourable Peterson and the Honourable Mitigalana. Do you have a hand? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I might say, Chair, I'm sorry I didn't read this, because some of the questions in answered in the small print at the bottom. It's a pity I didn't read some of these things. But at the same time, I am happy about the inclusion of women in this court. I'm saying this as a rural woman. You don't even know that there is a court in Quality Mbizo as a woman, unless you are involved as a woman. They are going to talk about. I don't think we need, yes, we do need training, but just the attendance, we are not allowed to attend these individuals as women. But I'm happy it has been recognized. Maybe something is going to be done, because we need to go, we need to know what is happening in our area. And one other thing I would like to know is there a legal monitoring in these individuals? Because they just decide on punishing your child during your absence and visit, or a lot of things that happen in these individuals, which means, if there is legal monitoring, at least they are allowed to attend these individuals as a woman. Thanks.
Thanks. Let me confess from the offset, I haven't read the Prisoner Court's bill to hear about this comment that what I've picked up, it seems that the bill is already written to perpetuate that it's only the man. So it's not written as if a woman can be a chief when a person, that's all about. For me, that is fundamentally a problem. So we should start off with that. Secondly, and just coming back to our processes, I'm not sure that special task team is taking the work looking at the traditional courts bill out of the hands of the Justice Committee, so we focus on it, or does it do something about while it's still going to be debated on a continuous basis? If it is, then I want to suggest that we have, like, from time to time when it's on the agenda, the Justice Committee with the Justice Committee to have joint meetings. Not one person to that one. That's the best to keep everybody together, fast track in all of us. Instead of, sure, I agree that you should have a person or more than one person on that task team. But the actual sitting is focusing on that one. But in terms of the committees, we should somehow find a way through. That when it's on the agenda, we want to be part of that, and we co-chair, and that's all of us. You know, the normal way. I was hoping from the research of that, because I think it's a good piece of documents and research that we have done, but kind of more focused on where we should concentrate in terms of gender issues. Because it's quite wide, it's all of us. But I can't say, but this way you picked up. Other than these general concerns, where are those focused concerns? Where women are concerned, particularly women are concerned in all of us. So if they can maybe refine the document more further, because I'm not sure whether we have enough time to sit back, just in terms of catching up with what doctors have been concentrating on, from the gender perspective, that if they can help us focus, zooming in on that particular issue, that will be great. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, you know, the power that the men play, they can be very dangerous for us. Yes, I think we must also be careful.
Chairperson, I would like to confess that I never had time to peruse the bid. But I think it was so necessary for one to go over it. And I wanted to ask this question from you, but I feel I must withdraw it. Because I just wanted to ask as to whether did the portfolio committee have a chance to be in those public hearings. No, I've got it. It hasn't happened. Traditional courts. There's this exclusion of women. Can you imagine? Because they seem to be very adamant and stubborn, you know, those people who are running these courts. For an example, you take the case of a woman who has been raped, you know. You take, more especially, the domestic violence, whereby there's been, you know, that misunderstanding between the husband and the woman. You can see that poor woman, because she will never be able to express herself. Because when you are there, you must keep on respect. You must give that, show that respect at all times, you see now. Because there will be those Izinduna and the like. And I don't know how did it come that the Western Cape, as a province, never had this traditional court, because it seems it has been an exception from all the provinces not to have this traditional court. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And can I apologize for being late? But unfortunately, just about every committee of parliament issue that I know I'm specifically doing this morning, I have to attend constantly from the new committee that needs the quorum. And I've got to go to the one on xenophobia, frankly, because, you know, I've been very involved with it. But I did want to come and see what was going on with it. Because I think we have every reason to be extremely doubtful or dubious about this whole exercise. Women's organisations have been very vociferous in their criticism of this bill. Now, it's a very good thing to get rid of the Black and the Dresden Act. We all believe that that's long overdue. It should have been done years ago. And it should have been addressed years ago. But the way, but what has happened here is not appropriate for our modern democracy, where women's rights are entrenched as equal in our constitution. And it seems to me, on the face of it, and according to the memorandum that attacks this bill, that the Justice Department went off and spoke to Chief Nakanyana, and we all know what he thinks about women's equality. I mean, he was very vociferous in the negotiations. I mean, I have debated quite often on this issue, and I, with other women, and I mean, he made it quite clear that he had very no opinion of women's equality, and yet he seems to be the main authority for the background to this bill. The South African Law Reform Commission, their proposals have been ignored, which is ridiculous, because I mean they're the body that is mandated to do research into law reform. Women's organisations are very critical. It is in its nature, the way it's drafted, discriminatory. And I think that Mr. Peterson's idea of sitting together with the Justice Committee is actually a very good one. But I think we should, as a women's committee, we should demand to listen to the women's organizations who are opposed to this bill. Because what has happened is that they've replaced people's access to the lower court. They've given huge areas of jurisdiction to unelected people. I mean, many of these people are just, they have very little, I've got nothing against the police to say, but, to give them this vast area of jurisdiction, I don't think we've ever compensated. And it's actually, this goes back to the old times, where women are, women's concerns are not addressed. And all the issues listed here on section 4 of this document, are very valid allegations of abuse of the conferred judicial authority by some traditionally just patriarchal stereotypes, violence against women, litigants, fragmentation and lack of enforceability of decisions, practicing and sentences, some of the practices and sentences of traditional courts are really, shouldn't be sort of expanded, if you know what I mean. Obviously there's a place for this, but the way this document, this bill has turned out, I don't think was intended, and it's not appropriate for us present time. That's our view. I've been asked to issue statements about it, and I have said statements on behalf of the VA. We think there's a whole lot more research that we need, there's a whole lot more, input. We need to listen to the public on this, the women's organizations. We shouldn't only listen to Pete Lampignana.
I do understand what
Honourable Pamela is saying. You know, sometimes the issue of equality, it cuts across all parties. You will find that the constitution of the African National Congress does mention that it's a man non-sexual. But it does not everyone. Men will have their own behavior all over. I'm just referring to what you're saying. You are not the first person I've heard about talking about referring to Nongonyala as the most and if I have a serious concern if this being really is led by such people proposed by such people, and I really feel at some stage we need to invite the South African law reform maybe to talk to them, because the last time we spoke to them, Stemple, you remember it was about the HIV when Lulu was the chairperson. And we asked them to come back, and I was invited by Minister Mando, when she had an intervention, from her side. But I think we need to speak to them also, because if you want the issues that we're concerned about to be addressed, of course, the issue. I don't know whether
from what has been raised by the members to join you.
I haven't read the bill, so I really can't comment, because I'm really relying on what the research has told us. I also, by the very nature of who I am and where I come from, I know nothing about traditional courts and traditional justice. So I'm putting that straight on the table. And so I really can't comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm relying on my fellow members who have more, and I acknowledge that you obviously know much more about this than I do. But what I want to ask you, and I think it's probably a huge problem in a country like ours, where we have a constitution that recognizes gender equality, and the Constitution also recognizes traditional authority. How do you reconcile the two? And if this bill is trying to maintain the authority of traditional courts, but
and now for we, I'm talking about we as all of us as women, also want equality for women. How do you reconcile the two? If you bring women into those courts, are you not going to change the whole nature of those courts? I mean, why don't we just have no, just a sort of justice, the other kind of justice system. I don't want to say the Western justice system, but you know, how do you actually put the two together without destroying one or the other? I find that very difficult, and I don't know how they're going to get around that.
Yeah, because it covers the reach of these courts in an unacceptable way. I mean, they have a place for it. Just in terms of what Honourable Member Peter said, in terms of refining the document, and what we've done is, this is Gillian's paper from her justice perspective. Crystal's already started doing something from a gender perspective, so harnessing on the implications for women. And what we'd like to do is, having taken all the discussions that's happened here today, is to add that to Crystal's paper, so there's something that belongs to this committee. But we want to then have recommendations that come out of that. And I've heard a number of things, and we need to synchronize what are our recommendations. So whilst we raise the content issues that we have a problem with, which we will take responsibility for putting together, we need to be clear on what are the recommendations. I mean, one of the things that came out is to have joint systems between justice and the JNC. There was another recommendation around the JNC also hosting public hearings with women, and we need to check whether there's endorsement for that. And then thirdly, for the JNC to sit on the task team that is dealing with the bill as well. And then also, if you can just help us understand the process, we will do that document within the next week or so. But do we need to bring it back to the committee next term, or can we get endorsement from our story to proceed, you know, just so we understand what is the process in terms of the way forward?
Okay, I just want to ask what does the committee feel? Do you think it would be worthwhile us having an engagement with perhaps some of the traditional leaders on this?
What I'm proposing, before we meet with anybody else, that we first consolidate our base.
Yeah.
We seem to be fractured. All the suggestions that we consolidate the team from the same system, get all the support around we can, before we go even to the traditional leaders and just all of us. So there we might not get enough support. The further proposal I would be for us to consider, you know, the camera you suggest, you refer to the chair, I think for all of us, our term comes to an end. What is the kind of legacy that we want to leave? Within that understanding of a legacy, where do we see the minister feature that already said, this is my last term, I'm not coming back to Parliament? What kind of legacy can we entice him to say, come hell or high water, this is the kind of bill we want to see? The kind of bill, if there should be a bill that will come through, you know, it's about getting the minister on our side, SFR, to get on our side, because I'm not sure whether we spoke to him, his understanding of that. Just lastly, Chairperson, I think when we read this bill, I'm going to get a copy for me now, Doctor's minus one. Maybe it will be worthwhile also reading the Equality Rights Act, because I think you can eat a lot of value out of that Equality Rights Act. 2000, yes. We adopted it, yeah. We written it in 1999.
Yeah.
That's the one, but from there you can get a lot of value for a particular symbol that we doesn't come from that particular background. But lastly, Chairperson, you know, the one question that we should all ask ourselves, and particularly the people, whoever they are, that support the bill in this group form, in every aspect of life, evolution takes place. But it seems like this traditional cause bill has been standing still, marking place all the time. There's no evolution. So maybe at the time, many years back, there was time for a traditional courts bill But in a moment of society, we find ourselves in what is the same reality we want to capture, but in a new society. And therefore, when we do rewrite this, it's to say, what is that value of a soul that brought my parents and grandparents through, and I want to take my kids on, but in a modern sense, in a modern South Africa, in a modern world, with all the value structures in place. Without excluding the rights of my daughters and my granddaughters, and that's all of that. So it's that kind of angle that I think that we should try and look at this one. Thank you.
I wanted to suggest that we need to have the facts on our own and strengthen ourselves, because those traditional leaders, I don't know, we will need to maybe invite Upateki. We leave out Honorable Mantanya, because he can just show us haywire, because this thing took him very much. Yeah. So also then, yes, you can also, before, can we invite, there are these traditional leaders, now are there are women that are now also chief. Mm-hmm. You know, invite those
well,
women,
now I'm a coach.
Those mama makos, also so that we empower ourselves before we're going to this essence.
Yeah, now I want to comment from you. I think we have been on discussion now, we have just gone to way forward. I was still going to go back to discussion. Let's just continue. Yes. I was now going to go back here, Camila. I think you want to say something. We on discussion, and then we are going to go to way forward and take all these recommendations.
I have my hand on.
Okay.
Chairperson, is it possible for this committee to have a representative in the top team?
Okay.
I'm just asking.
Yeah.
People can come up
with questions. Honorable Chair, I just want to say from Honorable Randy. I often feel that a lot of I often feel that a lot of the problems we experience in society is because we have kind of thrown our traditional values, and traditional ways of doing things, and that people have no kind of fear. They don't have a guiding principle left anymore, because we've destroyed so much of discipline in society that came through traditional values. And I think that applies to all cultures. I would believe there is a place, but somehow we've got to incorporate into the modern society. So I agree with you. You need evolution, but you can't throw the baby out in the bathroom.
Particularly you see, the problem that we have, we confuse modernization with westernization.
Yes.
And it can't be the same. It's not the same.
The
and you know, because when my siblings are coming around the table and eat, we still pray.
Yeah.
We don't pray the old prayers, but we still pray. Mm-hmm. So if those kind of things, do not modernize, then would not westernize and claim this modernization. Don't Americanize the practice. It's about this evolution we talk about, that we want to get to the same value outcome without oppressing agenda
particularly.
Okay. I think when you read the February, the introduction of the
okay.
And you would think that the rain would improve against you, the camera, when you use the introduction. I know that you have put this together yourself. But when looking at this, it is with good intentions, but there are so many gaps that we have to treat. And our concerns that have been raised here, I just want you to know whether you are going to write it, because already they are way forward, and they are assisting me to come up with that document. And gender the whole thing, you know, and bring it back to us. About the meeting with the law reform commission, I don't know whether we can suggest now whether we have that meeting before we get to any meeting, combined meeting with the justice, because you also said.
As far as I know, if you're asking me, they're rather trying to gallop ahead with this. I think we need to, I think that would be a very good starting point to speak to the customer.
I think we need to be able so that we get a clear picture of how they fit with the whole industry and what they do. Maybe that's our executive means we would have to come in there. As a member, as long as this is after the ANC men's conference.
Or other conferences.
When is
I think it's
second.
July.
Second.
Yeah. So, I think we need to do that. And maybe we can come in, but I also think, honorable, we need to keep pace with the meeting of the and so that we can make this proposal, and they will tell us when we can go and come and join them. Maybe apply to the relevant authorities.
Wouldn't it be an idea, first of all, obviously, I could apply to Justice France, we can go to the meeting. But when we establish when they're having their first meeting on this, maybe the day before we could have a meeting with the Law Reform Commission, or in that week or something. So if you're not going up and down,
They
have a really important meeting.
But they're going to come take a substitute. How, what, during the recess, are they going to come take a substitute? Or is it going to be more than a week?
Yeah, it's probably August again, which can be time to start, you know.
Yeah, so we must look at the maybe the so that, you know, in the two sense, we must have a meeting with law reform so that we don't come and go and come back at any price, right? When we establish when their meetings are, so that we can maybe make a request with the law reform that they must come and meet us. They
I would request that it shouldn't be a short notice, though, when we are invited to come back, at least, so that we can be able to attend.
I definitely
should
know
anything
about the engagement. Okay.
Other.
Okay. About whether we can have someone who can. I don't know what the people think. I think we have. Now, what are we saying? Are we saying we want to nominate someone?
Yes. Yes.
That's it. Is that for you?
Master.
I wanted to propose proposals to you, probably I'm going to ask, can't you give us time that we can forward proposals to you? Like, I'm sure it's no wrong because I'm not sure if the casting is sitting now and every day.
No, they're actually just in the process.
Yes, I was proposing the name of Makas. But who is he called? Oliswa Makas.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Who is that?
No, man, just a whip somewhere.
I think really if you feel that, I think they would just like somebody, but I think one would be sufficient. Yeah.
You know why
I think
we need to think of the gender and they can have two and men.
Okay,
we
can
make sense. Okay. Yeah, fine.
It
makes
sense to you. Mm. It does. It's fine. Now that we have this late dominant, I think the women must fight.
Yeah, I think.
Yes.
We must go and fight. Oh, we've got our way forward already. People have addressed themselves on. It was things that they could take into consideration. And then issues that have been raised our concern. And now we agree to the to
and I like to agree to
this because I just talked to that book. Yeah. And I wanted to hear from before we met this thing. I wanted to hear from Kristen what that she thinks, how far has it gone?
Thank you. I think one of the things that I wanted to highlight was in terms of the gender concerns that are directly noted that you can learn from the book, that Honorable Peter Bolton the specific things that I've picked up from the bill so far in terms of that the presiding officer must ensure that women are afforded full and equal participation in proceedings. But there's no indication of how this is going to happen. There's no legal instrument or no monitoring tool to say, so first of all, the role of the female litigant or something to that effect. The concern for me is this just going to be a quantitative process? Because in terms of numbers of it, to say we need to have 5 women on the sample.
Mm-hmm.
All the women that are going to be there really be allowed to provide value to the process. And one of the things that Jeremy mentioned was the 2003 report from the Law Reform Commission. One of the recommendations they made was that the representation of women to these courts and councils must be guaranteed by law. And in the bill, from the department that has come out, that recommendation is not there. So those are really specific things that we can look at that have been excluded from the current position. Secondly, also one of the things that we remember is in terms of the traditional role of women coming to these courts. I think in one of the hearings, one of the members stated that in our culture, women don't go to these courts, and when one does go, she sits in isolation with her head down to show respect. So how can women go to these courts, particularly when we're not involved in dropping of this ball? So that's a very important issue also, because we need to look at how all these biases that are currently evident in the ball, how are they presented? What can be put in place to be prevented?
So those are the kinds of issues from a gender perspective. I mean, it does, well, these have been raised in every country. I think specifically those are the things we can start looking at addressing and saying what, in terms of what's been put inside from the bill, can we put forward to remedy those issues that have been highlighted. So, I mean, in the current context, the bill is not gender-centered and women can therefore. So we need to come up with something in terms of recommendations that we can put forward that is about.
Yeah. I think to add, you know, while we're talking about this, I'm just thinking of what our public is done. Because we do need that, so people should be aware that we are also protecting on
I'm not answering the question you're asking, but I'm just saying, as women in this portfolio committee nationally, we've got to fight for the rights of the women. Those women in the provinces, wherever they are, they must feel our presence. I just have that feeling. I'm just short of range.
Jefferson, thanks. There's another concern that one has. There's a lot of assumptions in this book. It normally says, like in common law, that if you have been found guilty of a crime equals to like theft or fraud, you can't hold a position of trust. Now, if you find guilty, they can't take away the fact that you're a chief or a headman, and that's all of that. But you can then be given that responsibility to oversee something of the same nature within the regional court both. Now, could that be correct? Yeah, I am a convicted fraud thief, and that's all of that, and yet oversee. So, like I said, it's a lot of assumptions within this. It's all the purists, and that's all of that. Other than that, what the women subject themselves to, here's a man that was found guilty early on. So he pays the fine in your normal court. I nearly said white court, but your normal court, he pays that. He comes back, he's now a chief. And he says, I will oversee that. I will oversee all those other kinds of things. So for me, that is problematic. The assumption needs to be cleared up much more. To say when we do have those people overseeing a particular activity, this person would be clean at least of such allegations or even found guilty. That's the first thing. The second one, I think, a group that has got a big constituency that we should consider inviting is our church groups. Because even if you live in a particular area under jurisdiction of chiefs and kings and just all of that, there are religious people, the churches and all of that. And what are they saying about the congregation subjected to something like this? So I'm hoping, Alan, that the Catholic Church that is going to be represented here, what about these others, your African and digital churches, your all of that? So I'm just without identifying a particular church group, but look at them, because they, I think, putting together, they have a bigger constituency than any one of us.
Yes.
And yet they seem to be forgotten. I don't think deliberately, but they seem to be forgotten. What is the role? If they have not made any submission to the Justice Committee, can we invite them, all the church groups, and say, come and make a submission to our committee? Even if we don't, might not have a public hearing on it, but if they can submit all those written submissions that could give direction that we need a public hearing, given this kind of submission. So the church groups, I think, is a good constituency that we should consider inviting.
Thank you, Randy. I just want to remind you that we want to talk about the issue about the publicity. Is
that
in line? Okay,
no, it's not about that.
But you can
go on. Oh, okay. I was going to suggest, Annette, that at times when we are doing this oversight meeting, we go to a meeting. We must be invited in one of these courts so that we should have an idea of a home of God where no women attend. That really, I just want to correct some of the churches that was once brought up in the predicament. There are churches that are like this bill, that women have no say, women sit there, men sit there, women do this, then sometimes it's going to be impossible for those churches to attend. I know of some. But really, I feel bad because I am in a rural area where this tradition still happens. And we are not allowed to go there. We have no say. How can you just be there in an area where you have no word just because you are a woman?
So I just wanted to get some clarity on some of the actions that are going to come out of this now. The one thing that can happen immediately is a letter can go to Mr. Cohen to say that we want to nominate a member to the task team,
mm-hmm.
that we want to be a part of all future meetings. I mean, that Ayanda can do in the check and sign, and that can go off. But what I want clarity on is, we going to be doing a revised document from a gender perspective. Do we send that with the letter, or do we wait for the committee to endorse that in August? So if we can just decide on that. And then secondly, in terms of the public hearings issue, what I heard my story suggest earlier on is that in August we meet with the SA Law Reform Commission. And do we wait for after that and to look at, do we flag public hearings for now? There's already been a bunch of public hearings through justice. And then on the publicity issue, there is a media department, and do we want to go the route of doing a press statement? The researchers can help with giving them the content, and the Joint Monitoring Committee can issue a statement. I'm not sure what the protocol is, if we have to go through WHOOPS or to do it, but that can be clarified. We need to look at what is the best way of doing it. Is it a statement from the JMC? Is it an interview with a member? But there is the media department can assist, and we can help put some content together.
I don't know how, if I can just have a agreement from the committee, but I think the letter to the chairperson of the Justice Committee should go straight away. We shouldn't wait until we have the input on the gender implications. I think that should be settled straight away if the committee agrees. And then as far as the publicity is concerned, I think it would be good and right to have a press statement sent out on behalf of the JMC.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if somebody's interested in doing an interview like SABC with the chairperson, I think we need to put our position out there so that women in South Africa know how we feel about this. So I think whatever we can do to publicize our view would be good.
Okay.
Honorable talk.
Thank you.
I was just talking about the public hearing. That really, this issue must go to the deep rural areas, because it's where these things are happening. And those people, I don't think that they really know what is they are right about this traditional code. And again, I was thinking that the language that is being used must be the user-friendly language, the language that the community is using, so that they must understand what is this all about. Another thing is that the legal practitioner, is this a traditional court or traditional, I don't know what can I say,
customary
do they have a legal practitioner? Because I think that other issues they can just sign on the person and not knowing that they do the right thing to that person. This is my main question.
Chairperson, I had my hand up to second the idea of the press conference by this portfolio committee, and as she had put it across to us.
Can we put hands, please?
What I would suggest is that other than just the conference to issue a statement, that we can then distribute to all, particularly the community radio stations. Because the community radio stations is normally in the rural and the poor, where it's not much of the mainstream media. Because the mainstream media will give you about 30 to 45 seconds on a story like this. Or it's not. There's no whatever in it. It's a good story. So you'll get it maybe 30 seconds. And I think we can prepare at least, and hopefully we can try and arrange this room with a view interview with particularly the chairperson Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
House with a view, something to do.
View from the house.
View from the house. Is that, and maybe chairperson, because I think what we have here, there's no opposition that this building in its current form is a problem. But if we can maybe try and offer and include with you an opposition member or two, that you can see that we are collective in this. That woman in Eastern Africa is concerned in its rural form. But I don't think we should go there just to cry. To say, yes, we have a problem, but there's a way
what
forward.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. And there will be an appeal to all women, wherever they are, okay, far, is to please come in and send their submission. Forget about it. We will. Could inform in the future about the public hearing, but these are the addresses for them to send their comments that will strengthen what we want to do. So the press conference, the statement must be positive of nature. You say maybe in one paragraph, these are concerns, but these are all the good things that we intend to come out of this. Obviously led by you.
The statement,
and I don't know. So your department, your committee, back to arrangements for Tuesday, I'll fuck that interview.
I recommend to the statement that once you said I have been
but that doesn't stop the committee to go on. Yeah. Chairperson, I make you believe that your conference, the Women's League conference, will be addressed by a certain Mr. Julius Malema.
Sure.
Yeah.
Stop talking about such things. Just control the meeting.
Out of order.
Oh.
You know, it's not there by mistake that it's for the army.
No, no, Chairperson, let me rather say, I'm not sure when you're going to be available. We don't want this to stand over like for 2 weeks or whatever. If you're not available on Tuesday, if you're available on Wednesday, ideally want to see the Chairperson lead this. If you're available Wednesday morning, maybe we can do it on Wednesday.
Yeah. With this, the content will be built on what of the statement, and we are here on this. I just wanted to instill something on what we're saying. I don't know whether my colleague mentioned. What could happen in this court
in terms of women struggling for the maintenance of their children? You know, if the atmosphere is so such an atmosphere that is male dominated like this, and the expectation is that the women must keep their heads down, and you can imagine what would transpire in that court. Yeah, I just wanted to know whether it can be
there. I think maybe that's the one positive thing about them is that they exclude maintenance. I think that's not going to
maintenance issues are not going to be dealt with by the traditional court, so it's excluded from the bill.
I think, honestly,
I'm not sure why the drafters did it. I mean, they didn't really go into detail. But I think perhaps there was a concern about, I don't know why it didn't sort of feature the rest of the bill, but perhaps that was a concern. That that people wouldn't get a fair hearing, that women especially might not get a fair hearing. Mm. So, but the COD didn't mention that, but it is excluded.
That's
a good thing. That's a good thing. That's excluded. I think it is a good thing that it's excluded from these courts, because that means that if you need maintenance, you have to go. What is the opposite of traditional justice? What is the term? You don't know what it is.
Can we also? What is that? Is it restorative justice? No.
I mean, they sort of align traditional justice with restorative justice. I mean, they're saying that. So I mean, that's the terminology is very. I'm not sure, but I mean, they say restorative justice. They align in the bill with restorative justice principles with traditional justice. They sort of say that they're one and the same. I think that's the basis of the bill. That's what they're trying to uphold with those principles.
You know that my
name
called
Bill
of
him.
It's not about him. I'm sorry. It's not about him. The terminology that we use. My husband, that children are born here. And life must go on. And if it's excluded, how fast are these people traveling to go and put their complaints across? Should they go to? That's my concern.
Madam Chair, I mean, it's such a good point because you're right. I mean, that's the difficulty with the bill. I mean, it's such a good opportunity to bring justice to people. I mean, if I don't know if they can do it. I mean, but it really is a good opportunity, and especially because maintenance is an issue and access to magistrates' courts are a problem. But I think that relates to the training. You know, I think there's an issue about what sort of training programs they're going to be able to put in place. So I think they were concerned that they wouldn't be able to police the maintenance issue, which is why they took it away. Which, as you say, I mean, it's sad because I mean it seems like a good opportunity for people to have access to maintenance.
I don't know. You know, my thinking might be skewed. You know, and the recipe for having a domestic violence or anything you may call it. The recipe is that when you fail to maintain your kids, one of those two, and how to separate the two. You see, you just deal with the other, and some of the factors that really fall into that, you just think you can't deal with. People must go elsewhere for that. It doesn't make sense. Mama Gala.
Chairperson, I agree with you 100%. Domestic violence. If the child is not maintained, that falls under domestic violence. But as far as I know, just a little bit of it, with these traditional customary courts, if the girl gets pregnant, there's what they call you must pay the damage in Dawood. You must pay the damage, and there will be they will buy the ox and the goat, and there will be a big feast, which that meat will be eaten by those who are not yet
elderly.
Yes, and that is the end of it. Nothing more. Once kukishin taulo, according to that customary funny court.
Yeah.
You see now? I'm just thinking that's the ritual that they follow. And after that, all is well. Thank you.
At one point in this law, in the small print, it is not allowed.
What?
In Taulo. This thing of giving out sounding in Kusha or in Kusha or in Kusha. Somewhere in this small place,
what is allowed. I didn't say what is allowed, but they said some of these things, I'll have a look.
Okay.
I think
maybe we still have to go through this. But I really think that, you know, it's another thing for them. Maybe the law reform will explain that.
Mm-hmm.
The committee will explain why do they think they exclude it.
Mm-hmm.
And they will understand better. Have we exhausted
this? Yes. I don't understand why they kept maintenance separate, but I think that the issue that Jeline is trying to highlight is the problem is the courts are very accessible, and so in that way, that's a big plus, because people don't have the resources to use other courts at times. The courts do have jurisdiction over issues that are very gendered issues, things like divorce, who gets custody of children, assault, and so issues of domestic violence. And the question is, yes, they're accessible, but given the patriarchal nature of those courts and the power relationships, are those courts going to give judgments that are from a basis of trying to understand gender dynamics and in women's interests? Mm-hmm. So they have the bill gives them power and jurisdiction over a number of issues that affect women. And in order to do that properly, you know, the kind of gender power dynamics need to be equalized. So one needs to engage with the question of accessibility to justice, but from a point of view where the courts are gender sensitive and able to hear women's voices and make fair rulings when it comes to things like divorce, custody, issues of domestic violence.
I would argue, given what we currently have just explained, that maybe the courts are not ready now to deal with the question of maintenance. You can imagine they would say give it 20 rand or whatever is laughable. So you have a better chance to get something more appropriate at a court away from the traditional court. So I don't think, given all the good motives given, that the courts are ready to do that, to do justice, to do that. So sure, it's a little bit of inconvenience to go to the other courts to go and get justice there, but I think you have a better chance there than here. Until such time, there's nothing that stops us from amending it if we should come to the conclusion they are now ready to take up that responsibility. So maybe it's good. Looking back, maybe it's good not to give them that kind of responsibility. Because as you just explained, when somebody does all these horrible things, that they can buy an ox or whatever, and everything is gone and forgotten and all of that. What is that kind of maintenance and other responsibilities? They're going to slap on a useless man. So, because we want to ensure that we better the lives of women and make that and protect them. Unfortunately, they're not. They have to grow up themselves.
Okay, thank you. You know, I'm just thinking that yes, we are going to raise whatever we're talking about. That's for our next people that what we are doing is working out. I think we can have a sentence that says we would like to understand why the issue of maintaining is not going to be dealt with as a policy. So that we're talking about changing the lives of women. You know, after 2014, and if we don't indicate that we are really concerned about some of these things, so that they get ready by then, we start now. Because I don't see any reasonable point of them excluding the two. I don't see any really reasonable explanation that why do they exclude them. Because what would be the difference between domestic violence and maintaining the children and also customary law? Because those are all, I think, the discrepancies that we're talking about.
just want to indicate why we ask you to be nice as a day the commission comes to explain to us, but we do indicate that we are very much concerned to meet you. You know, I remember I was listening to Longboni so when she was in Chequers with the city. She did mention something about meeting when she was interviewed and talking about the city. I don't know how far it went because there was an incident after that of some something about maintenance. I don't know from what level. I think it was an extraction from what they were talking about, and then they made an incident of some incident from long ago where it happened. I don't know whether it was in a court or somewhere. But there was something mentioned about that. Because I listened very attentively on that day because I was concerned that why are we left out? And we are here in Parliament and the Committee of Justice is here. Why?
Mm.
I was very much concerned. I don't know whether we're exhausted.
Yes.
Less exhausted than this item. If we have. Before we wrap up everything, I just want to go to the other item on the agenda. We've gone through the discussion, we've gone through the breaking of the and we came up with our way forward. Now we are on other things. I'm going to carry something that we spoke about from the first day. Something that we spoke about. We're coming up with this issue of us not having a deputy chair. What are we doing about it? What are the members saying about this? You see, the quite a process. In our hands, but I think we can make noise about it. We can't go on, we are inviting to take it, and if I'm not there, it means it's a call up for the committee, we can't go on that. We need to have, and we the issue of not having a deputy chair, whatever they call it, it goes along with the non attendance of the I think we should write a letter to, I think, Mrs. Olga, the chair of the and to see the other one, the other, the copy to our chair of the Mr. Drake came up with that recommendation. I think that recommendation is the body that can't be separated once and for all. Because it should not work anymore. Now they say it's a process. And then I think also we should let the speaker know about it.
Very important.
Yeah. And we'll deal with the letter and then I'll sign it. Now go. And where, what is the other issue? Where will we invite? There's an invitation, so invitation to the meeting of the Minister of the Valentinary. Scheduled for the 27th. The Office of the Senior Document has been requested by Dr. Esther Pahad, Minister in the Presidency, to conduct a review of the institutional agency for
for the advancement of women with a view to respond to current debate on the issue. In this regard, the office is undertaking a research as outlined in the attached content document. However, the draft report needs to be validated through a series of consultations, culminating in a high level review of the directional statement for later in the year. As part of the initial consultation for the development of the draft research paper, the OSW has scheduled a special session of the later developmental in order to propose options and gauge the strengths and weaknesses inherent in the current mechanism. Your input in this process is critical. This letter therefore says to invite you to attend the later developmental this is in Tech Creek Premier Hotel, I think it's in Victoria. What are the options in terms of institutional arrangements for improved support for women empowerment in data impact in South Africa? Have you got the care and your second master? And then we can talk about whoever is going to that. And I wanted to say that I don't want to ask if that was really where you're begging me. Every time you want someone to bring a test something, the last result, yeah, sample only.
Sample won't be here, sample
then you maybe I thought of Monday.
Monday.
You won't be here also to bring
and
because you get like that. And maybe let's send it then.
Let's send out new members, maybe Kent is because he'll be in.
Yeah.
No, we'll send the new one.
Oh.
What is it?
That Kent seems to be a good choice.
Who?
We are going
Benna.
Because he's in Pretoria, that's why.
Yeah.
I was asking.
No, Randy doesn't mind. Victoria or Kai. But now the problem is that they always say we must use our
money.
They don't like it because the policy here is that people who invite you must pay for your flight and everything. So it means what will happen? If you listen over here, you won't get any money. And we have mentioned this to OSW, but with the budget that we give us, it's 2 million. And we don't know how we are going to do it, because really, we don't think that anything is there at any time. Now we have been invited to get someone to go to the debate. Not to do the agreement was. But the funniest thing is that when the debates are going on, the budget debate. They never think of us debating the OSW. Yes, that means, I don't know. All the committees can debate, but our committee and the other ones also, they are not given the opportunity to debate the budget. Now, we are supposed to debate what is it? It's equality. Isn't that very funny? How good is the parliament here in considering the participation of the
government? There's a number of things happening now around trying to review the gender machine.
And there are a number of studies that have been done, and we tend to pull some of these things together and suggestions together. And with all the turmoil happening at the CTE, they're looking at the CTE as well, all the studies that were done at the CTE. So we tend to pull together the suggestions that have come out of this process. And Chairperson, I'd like to ask that if we would be able to accompany the member that's going,
mm-hmm.
just so that we can document what's happening and put it together with the suggestions, because there's a move to tinker with the gender machinery and to change it. And some of the arguments are that because it's not functional, maybe we need to shut some of them down. And one of the arguments has been to take the CTE and put this part of the Human Rights Commission. And when we went on a process of speaking with people, what is interesting is that organizations and women are saying, don't touch it. If it's not working, fix it, but don't shut it down. So we're trying to document these things in a paper. If we go, the researchers will pay, but it must come from the chairperson in writing that you endorse us to go. And I think it's important that we keep a record of what's happening.
Okay. Your destiny is just for, you know, I'll be very for sectors of money, in the area of money, so that even if I'm not saying we are doing the other thing, you know, that is quite amazing. What we are talking about, I think it's not only the other committee, but it's a resolution of the ANC of the strengthening the mental development, because there was a serious need on that, coming also from the policy conference that it must be expanded, and ultimately, as we just know, it goes related to ANC. Hence, there is this call for a ministry. So those are the things that also we agreed in the cluster, our cluster here, that you are going to be doing this later. This is the cluster in the ANC of the government, which all the things, monitoring their system. So it's one of our priority areas. That's why it's so important for us. I'm very much concerned about now the concept of the minister in the president. Now that they are going to be the only concern now, because this is a standard law.
Longer.
Yes. That's for you. That's what the thing that we have finally got.
I was always intrigued that none of the researchers seems to do costing analysis around legislation amendments and just all of it. And we do it very often. I picked up from, particularly from the cabinet, they don't want to push a particular line because of the costing to it. And we don't seem to come up even to beat them on that. So when we, even my suggestion is when we look at our input, our change to the bill, is to do a costing to it. Because ours could be positive in terms of keeping in line with the kind of society we want to build, but it could also be less costly to do it our way. And I think, Mar, you said it best. When you introduce it now and let it develop or evolution take place, at the time that it's in full swing that you implement it, all things, it might be less costly. But the point I'm trying to make is a costing exercise of how much it would cost to implement something. Let's take the traditional cost. If you want to go and do that. And with amendments, the whole costing exercise around it, we seem not to be able to do that. And we don't always understand why things don't get implemented. You know, because if there's cost involved, who will oversee data, something also, and all of those things, that we will have, if there's cost, somebody that, there must be a bookkeeper, all those kind of things. And we assume the digital leaders will do all of that. And very often you don't get the proper results because they can't do it. So all in all, ma'am, the cost is like for all our work that we do. Going down to Pretoria, wherever the debate will be, what would it cost us, literally, vis-a-vis, what would it cost us if we don't have a representative there, whether it's me or somebody from Pretoria, whoever, in that meeting? What would it cost us? So what would it cost us if the research units are not working and getting a half-baked information a month later from what really happened there, vis-a-vis being there? So it costs us maybe 10,000 rand for the night to be there, but in long term, we could find that we save a million rand for the community in terms of the work that they have to do, the work that they have to do.
I think I agree with Randy, because the fact that we don't know why it's an issue of maintenance is not included, because we don't know what the risk is.
Because even there.
And we don't know what the cost effectively is. And the same as what you are saying now, if we don't attend that agenda meeting, what it costs us as South Africa? It's not even part of it, because we have to be part of it in the monitoring committee from Parliament. It has got a cost implications there, you know, for the future. Mm. Yes. I think I agree with you, Evan. I think so far these are the things that we needed to highlight on the other. Any other reason. The other thing is that as we have agreed that now that we've come to the end, we should be asking for a special meeting on Wednesday or Thursday for the adoption of limits. Also, you see, we've got our secretary here. These are the other things that I'm very concerned about. They will take our secretary and to go and work all over, SOP and all. And she doesn't even have time to provide the report. We don't have a report right now. She must rush to work together with me. So it means that I come back every time we have gone home and come and meet. These are the things that we want and really, very, very, very. They make one, you see that people just don't care. They don't care about you. There are committees that are important to them. Some committees are not important. Okay. And I think our committee, we have all that. We have. You know, so early. Land. What kind of land? Oh, finger land, okay. I don't know whether people would like to have, because I think today you have come to thank you very much, John. Thank you, everybody, Jenny. Thank you very much. I want to give you a therapy on the sound. Next time when you come here, you will be able to sound like us.
You see, we don't need this thing. We've got a rally voice. Thank you very much. And when we have invited the commission, I think we'll let you know then, so that you can be part of that. I'll tell John.
Yeah, I know the lady from the commission who actually was involved in the project.
Okay.
She's excellent. She really is. She'll be able to give you a lot more useful information. So
okay.
I can give her details to whoever.
I understand.
Yeah.
Information from when she writes the letter. And you see that it's ready. Thank you, everyone. Those who have the remaining for the thing I like to tell people. You want to say something?
city of Washington. No, she was just reminding us that in Women's Parliament. What happened to the youth one?
Next week.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we are supposed to be happy. Let's come in before we close. Okay. So our preparation for the women was on the 20th of August. I think we are permanently sitting together with Joy and they are also sitting. If we have to, you know, it's a very funny committee that we have committee. They come and see ready made food.
I haven't been, but I was there last year, Chair.
Yeah, very late, and they just tailor made everything good. So I think we must try and change the person's picture because really some of the things are not addressing our concerns. We will try and do it again, and I have a sense for reminding us.
Yeah.
Okay. And. There is something that we have to talk about. I want you to talk about this too. I think I have to just keep out of my mind. It's a very important my fear that if we pass here, we might not see them and we are going to do some of the things. Oh, so far, anything comes across me that has my mind that I feel that is important. Yeah. Okay.
Well, there was something that I was asked to put on the agenda, which like, also slipped on my, is a question that about the Dastardly attacks on foreign nationals in South Africa. And you will see, forget about the right and wrongs of anything, the people mostly affected by those attacks are women and children. And this committee seems not to have, well, I don't know, maybe that, maybe I'm just unclear, did not add or raise his voice in regard to that. We go into a constituency period. What is it that this committee wants all party members to do in a constituency period dealing with those kind of things? I know it's not easy. I know it's not the best thing that you want to go and do, but that's what the struggle is about, is to tackle those things that disturbs a person, that may keep you awake at night, that sees that this horrible weather, the tent is blown off, burnt off, but that's all of that. Again, men very often, I can promise you, I've seen in my constituency, men normally lead the destruction, and those that have been affected are the women and children, irrespective from which country they come from. The point again is, where are we located in the struggle for better life? Where are we? What are we doing in our constituencies? And what are this community asking all parties and all representatives to do in a 4-week period that is going to be involved? It's only going to be election work, or is it about the improvement of lives of women in total, wherever they are located on this continent?
Okay, thank you. I'm just thinking, doesn't this belong to you, Madam Multi-Party Women's
Caucus? I would thought so. I would have thought so, Chair.
Give them guidance from you.
Yes, please. Yes. Maybe we can talk about it together and then take it to the master. Because they are the 50 and the 70 and the 70
With those who have, thank you very much. And the meeting is again until we get permission for meeting on Wednesday night. If not, we thank everyone for the participation through this camp, and then we hope that you will have a good research. What is it, the research or?
Constituency time.
Constituency time. Yeah, whatever it is, both of them. We know that we never rest when we go out to the radio again. But most thing that I think I'm going to be fascinated about is that we seem to be having members that are
quite knowledgeable of things, the new members that have come in. We really appreciate that they are going to empower the committee, not that the members that are here to know what to do. Mamangele, our ex-mayor from Pretoria, she knows most of these things. And what's your province?
Northwest.
Okay, from the famous Northwest. But most of the, you know, most of the things that I said I'm fascinated is the way our research is working. I'm very much excited, Joy, because you asked Randy, we had got a program in communication, the other researchers are not doing much. I think he's also excited. Yes. He won't say away because we have been talking about it. You must know that you are doing a very good job, Joy. In actual fact, we are just closing the gap of us not having a patient, a special person, and a person with specialties on gender. The intervention that you are doing now is really critical, and I think we appreciate it. Any questions?
Yes,
thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, Mom.